Good morning, everyone. We are reading in Book 1, the Book of Beginnings, and we are in Canto 4, The Secret Knowledge. In the second section, we stopped on page 53 at line 253. In the first section of this canto, Sri Aurobindo gave us such a beautiful and inspiring picture of the greater self which lives within us to ourselves unseen, the psychic being, which may bring us wonderful experiences of worlds beyond this material realm, and which he assures us is keeping safe for us our fate within, treasure of honey in the combs of God. It's holding all the ananda of the Supreme deep within us. But then he's showing us in this section the other side of the picture, the difficulties of the earth consciousness in the process of evolution, which is reflected in our ignorance. He, at the bottom of page 52, he told us, our eyes are fixed on an external scene. We hear the crash of the wheels of circumstance and wonder at the hidden cause of things. Yet, he says, a foreseeing knowledge might be ours. It could be ours if we could take our spirit's stand within, if we could hear the muffled daemon voice, the voice of the soul within us, which is muffled because it has to speak to us through so many other layers of being. Too seldom in the shadow, too seldom is the shadow of what must come cast in an instant on the secret sense which feels the shock of the invisible, and seldom in the few who answer give the mighty process of the cosmic will communicates its image to our sight, identifying the world's mind with ours. These things happen very rarely. So we can read on from there. Luba, you'll read. Line 254 on page 53.
Our range is fixed within the crowded heart of what we observe and touch and talk and guess, and rarely dawns the light of the unknown, waking in us the prophet and the seer.
Can you project your voice a bit more? Yeah.
The outward and the immediate are our feet. The dead past is our background and support. Mind keeps the soul prisoner, whereas slaves to our acts. We cannot free our gaze to reach wisdom's sun. Inheritor of the brief angel mind, man still a child in nature's mighty hand. In the succession of the moments, leaves, for a changing person is his moral right. His memory stares back at the phantom's past. The future flees before him as he moves. He sees imagined garments, not a face.
Thank you. Anybody has anything to share or to ask about these lines?
How do you interpret the line?
Well, in our outward being, it's almost the only support we have. Everything that's already happened, that's our starting point, and that keeps us going. And if we're in doubt about what to do, that's what we refer back to. That is our support. It's our background. It's brought us here, and it's still a support to us. And in our this limited human mind. He says we can't look forward to the future. We could, if we could take our spirit stand within. The past has formed our body and our present, the evolutionary status of the earth consciousness that we partake in. But that in a way is the dead past. Something new has to come. But he says, human beings, man, the race, the human race, is still a child. Nature, evolutionary nature, is still looking after us and driving us. So most of our consciousness lives in the succession of the moments, what happens from moment to moment. Our memory stares back at the far past, but that's a phantom, a ghost. And if we try to catch hold of the future, it just runs away from us. And what we see as we look around us, these are imagined coverings. They're not the reality within. We don't see the face of the divine inhabitant, which is supporting all these appearances. These are the human limitations. So I think as our soul grows in the succession of lives, through actions, through experiences, if I've understood Sri Aurobindo and the mother rightly, it grows in strength, and it can influence our outer perceptions, our outer awareness, our outer actions more and more, until it becomes strong enough really to step out in the front and become the living center of our life and our action. It's a process of interaction between the inner and the outer. And for a long time, the inner is as if veiled completely. But even evolutionary nature, that we are her children in her hands, here he will tell us, she's pushing us towards freedom and mastery, helping us to become fit instruments for the full self-expression of the soul. At the moment, we are like kindergarten children, most of us. Mother has observed it in the kindergarten. And sometimes I think it's not even kindergarten, it's pre-creche. Savitri tells to death, because he's a child, won't he grow? Of course he will grow. So the human race is in the process of growing. And we've come to this crucial stage where we can begin to consciously collaborate in the process. And Sri Aurobindo and Mother have given us all this guidance to help us in that. Shall we read on, Amol?
Armed with a limited, precarious strength, he saves his fruits of work from adverse chance. A struggling ignorance is his wisdom's mate. He waits to see the consequence of his acts. He waits to weigh the certitude of his thoughts. He knows not what he shall achieve or when. He knows not whether at last he shall survive or end like the mastodon and the sloth and perish from the earth where he was king. He is ignorant of the meaning of his life. He is ignorant of his high and splendid fate.
Thank you.
Sloths are not extinct.
I beg your pardon?
Sloth. They are not extinct.
The giant sloth is extinct, like the mastodon. The prehistoric species. Fortunately, as sloths are not extinct. But we really wonder sometimes, no? Is the human race going to survive? We seem to be doing everything we can in the way of self-destruction. And this is because we are ignorant of the meaning of our lives. And there are several places in the poem where Sri Aurobindo emphasizes very, very strongly what is the mission of humanity. Why are we here? What are we supposed to do? And he's doing his best to clarify our ignorance about our high and splendid fate and the meaning of our lives.
And these limitations themselves
Yes, Franz.
Already the immortals on their restless heights, dwelling beyond the walls of time and space, masters of living, free from the bonds of thought, who are overseers of fate and chance and will, and experts of the curing of world need, can see the idea, the might that shifts time force, can make his light on undeserved here, while the world toils on with its deep, blind heart, the galloping hoofs of the unforeseen event, bearing the superhuman rider near, and impassive, the earth's dim and startled cry, return to the silence of the hills of God, as lightning leaps, as thunder sweeps, they pass, and leave their mark on the trembling breast of life.
Thank you. This suggests a horse, no?
Horse.
Yes, there's a horse and there's his superhuman rider. But these horses are the idea and the power that change time's course. They are bringing new evolutionary impulses. No? Only the immortals who are beyond the manifestation can see that happening. We don't see it, but they come with such immense energy, the idea, the might, that change the course of time, bringing about big new developments. And they come, they not only have hooves, they have manes, lovely long flowing manes of light. And they are coming from the undiscovered worlds. So the immortals can hear those galloping hooves of the unforeseen event coming.
Immortals is good, right?
Hmm?
Immortals hear is good.
They hear?
Hear immortals is good, right?
Yeah, he says these are the immortals who dwell beyond the walls of time and space. So it means beyond the manifestation in the eternal realm. They are the masters of living, free from the bonds of thought. And they oversee fate and chance and will, all the things that happen in our world. And they are experts, he says, of the theorem of world need. There's a kind of formula, you know, and they, or set of formulas, and they understand that perfectly. You know. The galloping hooves and the
rider.
And the superhuman rider, yes.
He comes, goes, and returns.
Yes, yes. They come, these hooves, this horse and the rider, they come very close, like a storm, a great storm. They pass the earth, and then they return, no? They come near. Earth gets very shaken and disturbed at those times when those powers come.
The superhuman rider referred to the Kalki?
Well, Kalki's the one, the one who is supposed to really bring about the final change, no? Maybe it's a reference, yes?
I have here a note that is Napoleon.
Well, maybe an example of one of these things, one of these happenings in human history that has changed a lot, no? But there are much higher changes than that. I saw a message of Mother, no, that Sri Aurobindo has been present at every, presiding over every significant change in the evolution of the earth. Sometimes he comes like this, trampling the breast of life. It may seem very catastrophic and disastrous time for us, no? But those immortals, they are just watching. They are not disturbed. They can understand exactly what is happening, what is needed, what will be the outcome. And they are helping that process. That's beautifully described next. Paula, would you read? 294.
Above the world creators stand,
In the phenomenon, we see its mystic source. These heed not the deceiving outward play. They turn not to the moment's busy tramp, but listen with the still impatience of the unborn for the slow footsteps of far destiny, approaching through huge distances of time, unmarked by the eye that sees effect and cause, unheard mid the clamor of the human plane. Attentive to an unseen truth, they seize a sound as of invisible auger wings, voices of an unplumbed significance, mutterings that brood in the core of matter's sleep. In the heart's profound audition, they can catch the murmurs lost by life's uncaring ear, a prophet speech in thought's omniscient trance.
Thank you. We're on page 54.
What is the heart's profound audition?
Audition is the capacity of listening. We do an audition for a play or a film, no? The team that's going to make the film, they invite actors to come, and then they listen to them, and they see, will this be the right person? That's used as a specialist noun in the theatre world, but it means the listening. And we are an audience, we listen. So Sri Aurobindo's talking about the world creators here. There was a question, somewhere.
I'm going back to the kindergarten.
Yes.
Should we enjoy being in the kindergarten, fall down, learn to walk and fall down and saw the mud and saw it, and not losing our childhood? Or should we hasten?
You should be true to your soul. It's quite all right to be in the kindergarten. But if you notice that there's something in you which is just longing to get to junior school, then you should follow it, no? With an aspiration and some effort.
It's okay to get a double promotion.
Yes, sure.
Interesting is to see an audition.
This is the deep listening of the heart, the innermost heart. And what do they hear? They hear a sound as of invisible auger wings. There's the science of augury, of foretelling the future, or getting glimpses or hints about the future by examining the entrails of birds. This used to be done by the ancient Romans. So an augury, it's something that indicates the future. But here he's saying that these signs of the future, they come on wings, they're bringing you a message. No? And they also hear these voices of an unplumbed significance, such a deep significance that we can't get to the bottom of it, we can't exhaust it, it has always new meanings to reveal to us, and mutterings that brood in the core of matter's sleep. Coming up from matter, there are these mutterings, these complaints, maybe prayers. They're coming up, we don't hear them, but those with the subtle hearing can hear those mutterings. The other day, Muriel here showed a very interesting film, somebody recounting their after-death experience. And one of the things he experienced was this kind of deep subliminal level, apparently at the very lowest level of life emerging from matter. And he said there were things like roots and worms there, and he saw them bowing as if they're praying. Beautiful. and they can catch the murmurs. There are murmurs, messages, hints, guidances that the life ear doesn't pay any attention to. They are aware of a prophet speech, a speech that's in touch with that divine vision when the thought is silent in trance and becomes omniscient. So with all that knowledge, they are doing something for the earth. Will you read line 310?
Above the illusion of the hopes that pass, behind the appearance and the over act, behind this clockwork change and vacuum, surmise.
Despair.
They watch the bliss for which earth has cried on the long road which cannot see its end, winding undetected through the and to meet it guided the unheedful moving road.
Yes, these are such reassuring lines. These world creators, they are above the illusion of our hopes. Sri Aurobindo says, man's illusory hopes. And Mother says it's like a splash of cold water on our hopes. Above the illusion of the hopes that pass, behind all the appearances and the things that are done on the surface, the overt acts that can be seen, behind this clockwork chance, which runs as if it's just been wound up and all the gears turn and things happen. And the vague surmise, when we look into the future, we think, oh, such and such might happen, but we can't see it clearly. Amid the wrestle of force, in all the conflict and strife that we experience here in our world, the wrestling, the trampling feet across the cries of anguish and of joy, across the triumph, fighting and despair, they watch, those world creators are watching the bliss. The bliss for which Earth's heart has cried, has been crying for so long, they watch it on this long road which cannot see its end. They see it winding, undetected. We are not aware of it as it winds undetected through our skeptic days, our unbelieving days, and to meet it, guide the unheedful moving world, this material universe doesn't notice, but those world creators are guiding the bliss towards us. And then comes one of Sri Aurobindo's most powerful prophecies about the world's future, Ramnarayana.
The mask transcendent mount is told. When darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breast, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp as it is in the night, shall be the covert tread of one who steps unseen into his heart. A voice ill heard shall speak the soul away, a power into mind's inner chambers, steam, a charm and sweetness open life's closed doors, and beauty conquered the resisting world, the truth light captured nature by surprise, a stealth of God come. swell the heart to bliss, and the earth grow unexpectedly divine. In matter, self-y lit, the spirits glow, in body and body kindled, the sacred bird. Night shall awake to the anthem of the stars. The days become a happy pilgrim march, our will a force of the eternal's power, and thought the rays of a spiritual sun. If you shall see what none yet understand, God shall grow up while the wise men talk and sleep. For man shall not know the coming till its hour, and belief shall be not till the work is done.
Thank you. Because those formateur, Mother calls them, those world creators are guiding the bliss to meet our unheedful moving world. When the right moment comes through their action, the masked transcendent will mount his throne. The transcendent is beyond all limitations. He's not bound by any of the forms he takes or uses to express himself or to mask himself, to disguise himself. He's always with us. The throne of the transcendent. It's his own throne. He's the ruler of this world, but he's been in disguise, hiding himself. He hasn't been directly ruling this world. He's been working through his world creators, his formateurs, and also through all the appearances, all these things, the clockwork chants and the wrestle of force. But when the right time comes, he will really mount his throne and rule. But he'll creep in very, very secretly. When darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breast, in some very dark, perilous moment, when man's corporeal mind, the physical brain, is the only lamp, the only form of consciousness, he will creep in like a thief in the night, secretly, as he steps unseen into his house, taking possession of his palace, the universe.
Why divine has to creep in?
Because he's doing all this very secretly, in disguise, secretly. And then he will speak. A voice ill heard shall speak. It's not very clear. He's not trumpeting his message. Very, very quietly he will whisper to those who can hear. The soul will respond. And when the soul responds, a power will creep into mind's inner chamber, not this outer mind, the inner mind, stealing in secretly. And then a charm and sweetness will open life's closed doors. All the resistances of life will melt away in the light of that charm and that sweetness and that beauty. Beauty shall conquer the resisting world. Then the truth light will capture nature by surprise. That stealth of God, that secret action of God, will compel the heart to bliss, and earth shall grow unexpectedly divine. And when that happens, even in matter shall be lit the spirit's glow, and this will be contagious. From body to body, the sacred birth will be kindled. And then our darkness, our psychological darkness, will wake up and become aware of that sacred chanting of the stars, the distant lights which are symbols of the many truths. Then our days will become a happy pilgrim march. We shall know where we're going, and we will happily face all the difficulties of the journey. Our will, our human will become a force of the Eternal's power. He will be able to make use of us with our full cooperation, and our thought, our human thought, will become rays of a spiritual sun. It will lose its present limited form. So when that happens, a few shall see, a few will notice what none yet understands. God shall grow up while the wise men talk and sleep, for man shall not know the coming till its hour, and belief shall be not till the work is done. Mother loved these lines, she's quoted them so many times. Oh yes, this is the one. Sorry?
Who chose to put these lines on the back of the 73?
The editors.
Yeah, but
the editors
are the times of Cherubino, or it was himself, or
No, it is new for this edition.
Only on this edition,
no? I think so, yeah. Yes.
So, here he writes very nice that beauty has to conquer.
Or to overcome. Yeah, that's something that life can't resist. It's bliss. No?
So, beauty is in this combination.
Yes.
Or is this also nature?
Well, yes, Mother says she's given it as a message for the opening of last school building. In the physical, the divine manifests as beauty. Mm-hmm. And that's why we should cultivate beauty in our world, knowingly. So again, he has given us this wonderful, inspiring vision of the future, uplifting vision. But again, he's going to return to the earth consciousness. That's what he'll be. Beauty will save the world.
I don't remember. I think it's interesting to think of the idea of a thief in the night, and that God can be stealthy, that there is an existence or a way in which we live on such a level of a construct. We've got the house. We've got the doors locked.
Yes.
But still,
he's going to creep in. Somewhere else, Mother says, if the door is just a little bit ajar, who's going to stop God from coming in and wakening up the soul with his kiss? It's in Book 10 when she's speaking to Death. Death says there's never any connection between the divine and man. How can it be? And she says, look, this has happened and that has happened and the other has happened. How can you forbid God's kiss upon the sleeping soul? He can come at any time and wake up the soul. And who's to know whether the door is ajar? And if it isn't, he'll like a thief, he'll find a way in. No? Yes? I think he likes to do it like that. I mean, it's a very crude way of putting it, but I think he prefers to creep in like that and send all this sweetness and beauty and convert all the resistances. If he swept in like a conqueror, like Napoleon, there might be a lot of resistance, no? But this way he can, unnoticed, he can dissolve all the resistances.
And that same because human being has a free will to learn.
So shall we read out? Yes?
Mm. And we have been continually being told that we are children.
Mm.
And in this part, it says that his influence will facilitate our growing up.
Right, yes. The growing up of our the Hiranyagarbha in us, the golden embryo that has, now it's there in the subtle worlds, it has to come out into the material world, be born in the material world, and grow.
Implies to me that God didn't really know how to contact our soul.
All part of the play, Audrey. Of course, God in us doesn't know. We will read it quite soon. He says, as he's come into all this and inhabited it and emanated it all out of himself, and now, as one forgetting, he searches for himself. He's searching for himself in each one of us. But at the same time, in his higher aspect, uninvolved aspect, of course, he knows what he's doing.
Physically, Lord Krishna also still the butter and
yes.
So close, whatever.
And now we love him so much for all that mischief.
There also, he steals for that reason. They're sending to Kams, the Makhan, because the people they met, the essence of the butter. God is coming and stealing.
The interesting.
Giving to the impurity whatever we are
saying. She's stealing from the thieves.
Yeah.
We are. That's what the Veda says, no? That if we enjoy the things without offering to the Lord, we are thieves. So he's coming and stealing his portion from us. Yeah. So we could go on and read the next section. We haven't read it yet, no?
No.
It's just a few pages to page 60. Will you read, ma'am?
Yes. A consciousness that knows not the form truth, awakened under of misleading dawns, between the being's dark and luminous ends, moves here in a half light that seems the whole, and interregnum in reality, cuts off the integral thought, the total power. It circles or stands in a vague interspace, doubtful of its beginning and its close, on a road that has no end, far from the original dust, the final thing, in some huge void, unconscious it lives, like a thought persisting in a wild nimbus, as if an unintelligible phrase suggested a million renderings to the mind. It lends a purport to a random world, a conjecture leaning upon doubtful proofs, a message misunderstood, a thought confused. Missing its aim is all that it can speak, or a fragment of the universal word. It leaves two giant letters void of sense, while without sanction, turns the middle sign, tearing an enigmatic universe, as if a present without future or past. Repeating the same revolution's whirl, turned on its axis in its own inane, thus is the meaning of creation made, for without context reads the cosmic page. Its signs stare at us like an unknown script, as if appeared screened by a foreign tongue. A code of splendor signed out a key, a portion of a parable sublime.
Thank you. Poonam?
In fairness to the perishable creature's eyes, the grandeur of a useless miracle, wasting itself that it may last a while, a river that can never find its sea. It runs through life and death on an edge of time. A fire in the night is its mighty action's blaze. This is our deepest need to join once more what now is parted, opposite and twin. Remote in sovereign spheres that never meet, or fronting like far poles of night and day. We must fill the immense lacuna we have made, rewed the closed finite's lonely consonant with the open vowels of infinity. A hyphen must connect matter and mind, the narrow isthmus of the ascending soul. We must renew the secret bond in things. Our hearts recall the lost divine idea. Reconstitute the perfect word. Unite the Alpha and the Omega in one sound. Then shall the spirit and nature be at one.
Thank you. Ravi.
To add the ends of the mysterious plan in the wide, signless ether of the self, in the unchanging silence, white and nude, alone, resplendent like gold, dazzling songs, veiled by the ray, no mortal eye can bear. The spirits bear and absolute potencies born in the solitude of the thoughts of God, a rapture and radiance of a hush, delivered from the approach of wounded hearts, denied to the idea that looks at grave, remote from the force that cries out in his pain, in his inalienable bliss delight, immaculate in self-knowledge and self-power, calm they repose on the eternal will. Only his law they count and him obey. They have no goal to reach, no aim to serve. Implacable in their timeless purity, all butter a bride of worship the refuse, unmoved by cry of revolt and ignorant prayer, they reckon not our virtues and our sins. They bend not to the voices that implore. They hold no traffic with error and its restraint. They are guardians of the silence of the truth. They are keepers of the immutable decree. A deep surrender is the source of might. A still identity they wait. A still identity their way to know. Motionless is their action, like a sleep at peace. Regarding the trouble beneath the stars, deathless, watching the worlds of death and chance, immobile, seeing the millenniums pass, immobile, seeing the millenniums pass, untouched while the long map of fate unrolls. They look on our struggle with impartial eyes and beg. Without them, cosmos could not be.
Thank you.
Impervious to desire and doom and hope, their station of inviolable might, moveless, upholds the world's enormous task. Its ignorance is by their knowledge lit. Its yearning lasts by their indifference. As the height grows, the low ever might their strength be marred and could not be saved,
Thank you.
A life can be true that dwells in God's experience, the way to remove all sin first, the slow outcome of the long and needless years, and the unexpected good from woeful deeds. The immortal sees not as we vainly see. He looks on the hidden aspects and screaming powers. He knows the law and natural line of things, undriven by a brief life's will to act, unharassed by the spur of pity and fear. He makes no haste to untie the cosmic knot or the world's torn, jarring heart to reconcile. In time, he waits for the eternal hour.
Thank you. Do you like to read?
Yet a spiritual state is there. While body and illusions force wings on, and nature moves away to adamant, a divine invention flows above. Alive in the death rotating universe, we will not hear about a casual glow, abandoned to a path beyond all force. Even through the tunnel of anarchy or fate, and through the weakness of death and fall, an outstretched hand is felt upon our lives. It is near us in abnormal bodies and birds. In its unslackening grasp, it keeps for us safe the one inevitable in the zones. No will can take away, and no doom change. The crown of conscious immortality, the Godhead promised to our struggling souls, when first man's heart dared death and settled life.
Thank you. Mi Hong?
One who has shaped this world is ever his Lord. Our errors are his steps upon the way. He walks through the fierce vicissitudes of our lives. He walks through the hard breath of battle and pain. He walks through our sins and sorrows and our tears. His knowledge overrules our visions. Whatever the occurrence, we must bear. Whatever our strong is and the present fate, when nothing we can see but lift and bend. Mighty guidance leads us still through all. After we have served this great divided world, God bless and wonders our inborn right. A date is fixed in the calendar of the unknown, an anniversary of the birth sublime. Our soul shall justify checkered work, all will come, near and now is not or far. This calm and distant might should act at last, immovable, ready for their destined task. The ever wise, compassionate brilliances await the sound of the incarnate voice to lead and reach of ignorance and hear the hollow yearning girds of life and feel the abyss there is the universe.
Thank you. Jean-Yves?
Dear, meanwhile, at the spirit's opposite pole, in a mystery of the deeps that God has built, but his abode below the thinker's sight, in this compromise of a stark absolute truth, with a light that dwells near the dark end of things, in this tragic comedy of divine disguise, this long far seeking for joy ever near, in the grandiose dream of which the world is made, in this gold dome on a black dragon page, the conscious force that acts in nature's breath, that dark old leveler in the cosmic scheme, carrying clay images of unborn gods, exemplatrix of the inevitable idea, hampered and wrought by the roots of fate, patient trustee of slow eternal time, absorbed from hour to hour her secret charge. All she foresees in mass imperative depths, the damned intention of the unconscious gods, answers to every that sees about the heart, and the evolving word first syllable, ponderous, loosened, contains its divinous flow, prior to the summit victory's last descent, and the portent of the soul's immense advance.
Thank you. We could stop there, or we could read the next short section. Shall we read on? Yes. Lorraine.
All here where each thing seems its lonely self, are figures of the soul transcendent one. Only by who they are, his breath is the life. An unseen presence knows the oblivious play, a playmate in a mighty mother's game. Wanting upon a dubious whirling look to hide from the pursuit in force and form. A secret spirit in the
Thank you. Jocelyn. Thank you. Dara.
The universe is an endless masquerade, where nothing here is utterly what it seems. It's a dream fact vision of the truth, which, but for the dream, is not even the truth. The phenomenon stands out significant against dim backgrounds of eternity. We accept its face and pass by all things. The part is seen, mistaken for the
Thank you, Helmut. Thank you. Mila?
I'm going to pray for him. He worships them. He adores them as his regent of desire. He gives to her as the mover of his will. He burns the incense of his nights and days, offering his life as a tender of sacrifice. A rapt solicitor for her love and grace. His bliss in her to him is his all the world. He grows to her in all his being's power. He reads by her God, he reads by her pain, all here in her countless youth, content to be with her and give her meaning. He makes the most of the little that she gives, and all she does, breaks with his own delight. A glance can make his whole day wonderful. A word from her lips, with happiness wins the hours. He leans on her, for all he does is, all he does and is. He builds on her largeness, his proud fortunate days, and trails his peak of plumage, joy of life, and stands in the glory of her passing smile. In a thousand he serves her royal needs. He makes the hours pivot around her will, makes all reflect her wings, all is their play. This whole wide world is only he and she.
Let's stop there for today. We can listen to Mother reading some of these lines right up to here, no? Right up to here, right up to where we stopped. Yes. There are several passages.
Outstretching arms to the uncomfortable, passionate, she prayed to invisible forms of God, soliciting from dumb faith and toiling time. Yeah. where the world dwells on with its deep blind heart, the galloping hooves of the unforeseen event, bearing superhuman rider near and impassive to earth dim and startled cry, returned to the silence of the hills of God, as lightning leaps, as thunder sweeps they pass, and leave their mark on the trampled breast of life. To love the world creator stands. In the phenomenon sea, its mystic source, these heed not the deceiving outward play. They turn not to the moment's busy tramp, but listen with the still patience of the unborn for the slow footsteps of fathers. Thus, will the vast transcendent mount his throne, when darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breath, and man's corporeal mind is the only life. As the thieves in the night shall be the covered thread of one who steps unseen into his heart. In matter shall be lit the spirit's glow. A few shall see what none yet understand. God shall grow up while the wild men talk and sleep. For man shall not know the coming till its hour, and belief shall be not till the work is done.
Thanks to Sherbindo.